a politician's security detail. The former intelligence agency chief denied the accusations. Galán is remembered for opposing the growing power of drug cartels and for his left-leaning proposals. He was also one of the first critics of the growing ties between the Colombian state and paramilitary groups. His assassins have not been caught so far.
At least four people have been killed in a fresh U.S. drone strike in Pakistan's volatile North Waziristan tribal area near the Afghan border. According to sources, the strike took place when the assassination drone fired two missiles at a vehicle in the Shawal area of North Waziristan late on Monday. The car was completely destroyed in the strike, leaving four dead. On May the 18th, another U.S. drone attack claimed the lives of at least three people in Pakistan's northwestern tribal region. A similar attack killed four people in the Waroki Mandi area of North Waziristan, where the Pakistani military forces have been operating against pro-Taliban and Al-Qaeda-linked militants since last June. The United Nations says the UN drone attacks are targeted killings that violate...
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
It's in the New York Daily News, but the last time we had a Triple Crown winner, 1978, the person on the Wheaties box
was
Bruce Jenner.
I knew that was going to be the answer.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why bring it up?
Yes, yes. You mean
they did not put affirmed? Mix some Wheaties in with the oats and hay?
Wheat and Wheaties.
Yeah.
We talked about this last week on the show with Caitlyn Jenner being up for the Arthur Ashe Award. Where do you stand on that?
All right, again, I'm hoping not to be misunderstood.
Okay.
Bruce Jenner, who I did not know well, I always had a cordial and pleasant relationship with. I wish Caitlyn Jenner well, and anyone, even if most of us do not fully understand it, anyone seeking to find the identity they're comfortable with and to live the happiest possible life without intentionally hurting anyone else, I think we're moving toward a more tolerant society, and that's all for the good. And I wish Caitlyn all the happiness in the world and all the peace of mind in the world. However, it strikes me that awarding the Arthur Ashe Award to Caitlyn Jenner is just a crass exploitation play. It's a tabloid play. In the broad world of sports, I'm pretty sure they could have found, and this is not anything against Caitlyn Jenner, I'm pretty sure they could have found someone who was much closer to actively involved in sports, who would have been deserving of what that award represents. That's not to say that it doesn't take some measure of personal courage to do what Caitlyn Jenner has done, but I think every year we look across the landscape of sports and we find prominent people and kids in high school and amateur athletes who I think more closely fit the description of what they're looking for or should be looking for there. And I think this is just a play to pump up audience, the way lots of things are put on television, to attract eyeballs, not because of the validity, but because of whatever the kind of gawker factor is.
Yeah, I looked at Lauryn Hill, the basketball player.
Yep.
I mean, it's all exploitative in a way. because of the award show. And, you know, now we look at the ESPYs and say, well, now it's got some legitimacy or something. I don't know, because I was there in the beginning when nobody cared. We were paying people to show up at the ESPY. You got an award if you showed up at the ESPYs. So,
yeah,
we'll
give it to you because the first three guys or that we wanted to give it to won't show up. But if you'll show up, we'll give it to you and make it look like you were the first choice.
Yeah, and I what Arthur Ashe stood for, if you have a cancer, there's a Stuart Scott Award. I guess you can still honor people. I was with you. It just felt a little too reality show, tabloid show that, all of a sudden, let's just jump in with Caitlyn Jenner.
It feels like let's buy into the Keeping Up with the Kardashians culture that has overtaken a good part of the cultural landscape.
Yeah.
That's a train that's left the station, and you and I can't slow it down no matter how we feel about it.
Great stuff this weekend. Fun to watch, Bob. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks, Dan. Take
care. All right. Bob Costas.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro. That's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? What did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for the smart of the original.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, welcome along. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on this physical plane. You have tuned in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world, of course, living under colonial, imperial, theological, racialist, homophobic, misogynist, neoclassist, neoliteral, neoliberal, neo-fascist, and anti-environmental oppression. I'm your host, Angry Indian, editor-in-chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the Fourth World from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com, and our main news portal, ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And along with our executive producer and master studio engineer, Ms. Guadalupe Morales, we welcome you back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the official broadcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service. So, it's been a while. Apologize for that. I had to go out of town and deal with another friend who's suffering from cancer and who only, it's in driving distance, and I was able to go, say goodbye. So I went to say goodbye, and it is what it is. You know, as an older man told me some years back, you know, going on almost 20 years ago, he said, look, you know, as you get older, more people you know start passing away. And it's not something you ever get used to. And he said, and those who say that they're used to it, they're either lying or they're totally barren inside. And he goes, you know, those are people you really don't want in your life. So, yeah, you know, it's really, you know, something to know when someone is passing, to see someone who you knew would, you know, was full of life and, you know, maybe they even had a chance to enjoy life. You dig what I'm saying? You know, not too many of my, you know, my personal friends have had the experience of enjoying life. You know, not if I grew up with them. You know, there are people I've met later on. And I'm going to say this, you know, I mean, not every white person, but, you know, almost all of them were white. You know, well, one Pakistani, I don't want to get into that case. You know, it's just funny. You know, I watched somebody go from, you know, being a pretty open-minded kid to this 100% narrow-minded jarhead. But then again, what can I do? You know, what can anybody do? You know, and yes, am I rambling? Yes, it's probably going to be about 45 minutes to an hour. So I have a long... That's about how long we have, right? Today in the studio. You know, fucking... I mean, what am I going to talk about, man? You know, I mean, really... Khalif Browder commits suicide because he was totally fucking brutalized. And yeah, we're all talking about the system, but you know, we need to talk too about the motherfuckers that were beating the shit out of him in that goddamn video, because who was fucking him up? Right? And yeah, you know, we're really mad with that cop, and we all should fucking be, because he's a fucking son of a bitch. You know, this Eric Casebolt. Yeah, I know, everybody wants to be sure to point out his rank, right? Or his former rank, since he quit, and he hasn't really apologized, but he's explained, you know, that role he took out, that first role, because he busts his ass a couple of times, but I'm talking about that first role he took when he first emerged from his fucking vehicle, and he was on the manhunt for somebody. He was looking to pull his fucking shit out on somebody. He wanted to pull his fucking weapon. He wanted to pull his service issue out on fucking somebody, right? So he's out there where, and if you look at the video really carefully, and I'm only describing him, just to be clear, he's blonde, he's wearing a pair of shades. He was talking to these young people. He was using verbal fucking communication to these folks. And he basically, if I understand this correctly, I mean, we'll watch it again so I can get the audio, right? And he's like, you know, okay, what's happening? I saw him trying to, you know, defuse the situation. Casebolt shows up and amps up the entire fucking thing. He put blood in the water. You understand? Anybody that has ever fucking knows anything at all about the madness of goddamn crowds, meaning those of the 5% out there who pay attention to shit, who look around, and of course the 10% who motherfucking look at all this shit only to use it as a textbook on how they can fuck up people better later on. You know, these are the cats that read 1984. They read Orwell's 1984 simply so that they could realize and how to fuck people up. They read Machiavelli just so they could learn how to do political evil. Now, the 85s, they're not worried about this. You know, they're more concerned about Caitlyn Jenner. Is it important? Well, yeah, it's important. Is it really important if you're transgender? Yes, it is. You know, for the greater political GBLTQ... and whatever the fuck else, you know, alphabet soup shit they want to add on to it, is it important for them? Obviously. Is it the most important fucking thing happening in the United States right now? No. You know, and I agree with Bob Costas. You know, not that I give a fuck about sports. I don't claim to be an authority on sports because I really don't care. I'm not into sports. But he made a fucking really good point. You know, this Arthur Ashe Award was supposed to be for really outstanding, you know, bravery, right, in the sporting field. And, you know, I kind of agree with him. When was the last time Bruce Jenner was on, you know, was on a track? When was the last time he did it at the Capitol? I mean, that was a while ago. Which, again, does not take away anything from him. You know, and I know there are people who are probably going to get angry and never listen to this fucking show again. And, you know, that's your prerogative. but, you know, I have to deal with every 28 fucking hours in this country, and now less, that an African person is killed by a police officer or a vigilante white person. Vigilante black person who thinks they're doing work for the white Jesus and 12 other, you know, Caucasians and shit. You know, that this, you know, all Latinos who feel like George Zimmerman, you know, who decided that, Well, no, I only mentioned Latino, Luke, because this is what his father went out of his way. Mr. Zimmerman Sr. went out of his way to let everybody know that my kid's not white. He's not white. That he was what? Peruvian or some shit, right? Which led to a whole other group of stereotypes. No, seriously. That it led... Right. I can't... Was it Reddit? It might have been. It was one of them. Reddit, BuzzFeed. You know, we're looking in the comments. You know. And when it was, you know, starting to get where the mouth breathers were starting to talk about, well, look, you know, he's Latino. So, you know, we can understand him beating up his girlfriend, you know, beating up his wife, right? Well, actually, his girlfriend, too. He beat up his wife and he beat up his girlfriend. And they're like, well, you can understand that because he's Mexican. And I'm like, what? Well, first off, he's not Mexican. You know, supposedly he's Peruvian or some shit. That's what his mother is. Second or third and fourth and goddamn fifth. What the fuck does that mean? I mean, and the thing about it is, you know, is there a cultural argument that can be made? Is there a cultural argument that a lot of goddamn people make, right, about abusive men? And they'll say that Irish husbands are physically abusive, that Italian men are physically abusive, right, especially in marriage. We've heard this, that the French, right, but where do we hear this? We hear this in Europe, right? You don't hear that in the United States. What do you hear in the United States? Black men all beat their wives. Well, a lot of motherfuckers beat their wives, but they're not all black, you know. And they're not all motherfucking Spanish-speaking Indians, you know. I can tell you that for goddamn sure, you know. But you know, do these things circulate, you know? Yeah, they do. And I'm getting to a larger point here, which is why it's sounding like I'm rambling. And, you know, to some degree, you know, somebody's going to say whatever the fuck I say is going to be a ramble anyway. Yeah, you know, I can quote Glenn Beck. But if I drop a syllable, you know, some far-right son of a bitch is going to say, well, you know, he's rambling, right? Because they don't know what the fuck else to say. And, yeah, so make a Glenn Beck comment if you fucking want to. Glenn Beck is goddamn insane. You know, he's fucking insane. And I'm not talking about his fucking past as a cocaine head. I'm not talking about his past, if it is past, about his drinking problem. See, I'm not doing any of that. I'm not talking about his underwear. I'm not doing any of that. I'm talking about the shit that he actually says on his fucking show. It's insanity. It's total fucking insanity. You know, this neuropathy, nervous, whatever the fuck, and that's why I say crazy shit. And he's allowed to get away with this. You know, this like Limbaugh. Now, you know, Limbaugh's easy to fucking tear apart because Limbaugh is a fucking fool. You know, but the thing about it is nobody really goes after Limbaugh. Do you notice that? You know, it's almost like he's fucking J. Edgar Hoover or some shit. I mean, what, does he have files on people? You know, what is it? This son of a bitch says whatever the fuck he wants to say about about anything progressive. He insults the entire fucking ACLU on a regular goddamn basis. But he used the fucking ACLU when his own ass was facing drug charges and shit in the state of Florida because he was sending out his Latina maid. Now, how stereotypical is that, right? His Latina fucking maid to go pick up his fucking dope for him and shit in a fucking parking lot. A goddamn supermarket fucking parking lot. So, no, you know, there's a whole, and the Duggars, do we really want to get into hypocrisy on the fucking far right? The Duggars, Josh Duggar, right? The whole fucking Duggar clan, and then you got Mike Huckabee, who wants to be president so goddamn bad. I mean, you know, he'll suck Jesus's dick if that will make him fucking president, because, you know, he just wants it so fucking bad. He just wants it so fucking bad. And he has nothing to offer the country. He has nothing to offer fucking anybody other than his religious bullshit, which I don't even believe that he fucking believes in.
But he turns out to be, besides the fucking hypocrite, which we all know about, he turns out to be a real fucking hypocrite, okay? Now, he's going to talk about morals all fucking day long, but he's still out here defending the Duggars. And if you notice, not one Republican has come after the Duggars either. So, what, do they have files on fucking people? Or are we dealing with a certain level of insanity here in this country to the point where, you know, being illogical is the norm? You know, I mean, the total fucking new normal. So,
but like I said, you know, if it sounds like I'm going on tangents and shit half the time, that's because that's how a lot of this shit is coming out. You know, and you really got to think about it. Look at all of the chaos that's been going on this past week, and look at all of the focus that's been on Caitlyn Jenner. For example, you know, Khalif Browder commits suicide because of the way he was brutalized in the motherfucking New York City prison system, or, well, jail system, really, because most people who are held there, they held there for less than a year or whatever, which is crazy, too, because he was held there for more than motherfucking a year, right? I mean, they hold a lot of people in there for more than a year. Supposedly, there's like 600 people there who have been there for years. But the point is that they make the distinction, you know, the technical distinction, that this is a city jail and not a prison, when really it is a prison. That's exactly what the fuck it is. Under international law, that's exactly what the fuck it is. And like you see with Albert Woodfox, who we talk about on this broadcast quite often, every time I get a chance, you know, Democracy Now! Has been really diligent. DemocracyNow.org with Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez, they have been very diligent on bringing up the Albert Woodfox case. But, you know, they have producers and what have you. We've been trying to get people to talk about Khalif Browder. We've been trying to get people to talk about missing and murdered indigenous women. You know, it's really hard for some strange reason to get people on, you know, this particular show. And, yeah, you know, I know somebody's going to say something nasty about what I said, but, you know, here's the reason why I'm saying this. Now, the majority of my social media activity, if you want to, you know, put this, you know, like that, and I've been honest about this, revolves around Twitter. I don't fuck with Facebook, you know. What's the point? You know, there's no goddamn privacy on Facebook, and whatever the fuck you say, right, or whatever is said about you, technically. Not that the same thing doesn't happen on Twitter, but it's ridiculous what happens on motherfucking Facebook. And when I look at my wife's Facebook account, it's just trash. You know, not that she necessarily bothers with this, but it ends up in her TL because of what the fuck people she went to high school with, who all turned out to be ridiculously racist fucking conservatives for the most part, which is really amazing her. And, you know, I have to say this, you know, politically speaking, you know, there's a certain level of denial about this, which, again, leads into where I'm going to end up. We're falling down a flight of stairs right now, but dig it. We're going to land on our feet. So just roll with me here. You know, there was a hell of a lot of attention paid to this transgender transformation that the media has basically been paying attention to because, one, we're talking about Bruce Jenner, and he was a sports person. Which doesn't mean a fucking thing to me because, you know, frankly, and I'm going to be real serious about this. I saw he was just in, well, not just in, but let's roll back to 1980. And I remember this, you know, specifically because, you know, someone I knew wanted to basically make a big trip to go to New York to go see, when I was living in Newark, to go see the Village People movie, Can't Stop the Music. Now, I wasn't interested. You know, that wasn't a fucking film that I was interested in. I think that year I was interested in that horror flick from Italy, Zombie, the original one. You know, the one that started it all, right? Fulci's Zombie. Not that goddamn matters, but I'm just saying. Here's the time frame, right? So, no, I wasn't interested in going to see that. And I did see it eventually when it came on television. Luke, remember we were just talking about this before we came in here today because I was watching it with my fam. My mother was like, "Oh, Bruce Jenner's in a faggot movie." That's what she said. Now, like I said, you know, I've made it very clear here. I was not raised by progressives. I was raised by conservatives. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, faggot was used often in my fucking house. And it's not that I didn't put up a motherfucking argument, but the point was, we're paying the fucking rent here. We can call these faggots whatever the fuck we want. They're faggots. And, you know, obviously my gay friends, you know, the couple that I had in my youth were not welcome in my home. So, and, you know, that's how it fucking was. And for a lot of households, that's how the fuck it still is. You know, you are immersed in pockets of bigotry, which is what I'm coming to and how we make our perception. See, we don't realize in many cases, like, the late Gore Vidal put it, that we're all prisoners of our time and space. And when we make opinions and have opinions in a lot of cases, we're not really, you know, hip. Or we refuse to be hip to the idea and reality of the fact that you can't be every goddamn where at once. Yeah, I know you got some psychic folks that talk shit like that, and some of them might be legit, but the ones that, you know, maybe are legit don't say the fucking shit that, you know, like, you know, they don't go to the degrees that I'm talking about. You know, like, what is it, Sylvia Brown? Well, you see, she's been totally flummoxed, and she's gone now, right? Was it John Edwards? He's another one that's been totally disproven. Because this is bullshit, for the most part. As an indigenous person, I've experienced, in terms of being in a room and seeing some freaky shit that, you know, I can't explain. And then I've seen some other shit going on with my family as a Geechee that, hey, you know, I can't explain. You know, rainwater in the glass under the bed. Hey, you know, I can't explain it. Some shit, it's just, I roll with it. I'm agnostic. It is what it is. But where I'm getting to is now, is that, you know, where we've been putting our psychic energy until, you know, like, what the fuck we've been paying attention to as opposed to what we're not paying attention to. Now, this issue with Caitlyn Jenner is real. It's real, and it's certainly real for her. But what I'm trying to point out is that, you know, they're making a big deal about this, you know, at this time, because they're trying to talk about how macho Bruce Jenner is. And I'm not questioning his masculinity, because, you know, see, that's one of the fucking problems with a lot of these conversations. Because each culture that you go into, and even within that culture, your social economic position has a, you know, a clear definition on what the fuck masculinity is, excuse me, for your particular fucking social circumstances. Now, holding up a baby in Nigeria and cooing and hugging and being a gentleman to your children and to your wife is considered masculinity in many, you know, traditional fucking, you know, Nigerian households, right? Sierra Leone households. Okay? My, you know, father's background is Yoruba, right? Geechee, right? So, you know, the idea of being gentle and what have you is considered masculinity. It's considered, you know, an expression of masculinity. Now, if you want to fucking get crazy, and, you know, and people will say that this is an extreme. Now, you can get crazy and call what I'm about to say an extreme, but it's not. It's the fucking reality. If you grow up on the goddamn streets, I don't give a fuck if it's in Paris, right? Roma, okay? Right? Hong Kong, you know? I mean, ask somebody in fucking Kowloon if they've ever had to fight growing up. It's not a matter of choice. You have to fucking fight. Because you're put into a situation where so many fucking people are. I mean, you have a ton of fucking folks living in this one district, right? They can't leave because of poverty. There's very little, there's very few resources within the motherfucking district. What do you think is going to happen? People are going to stop procreating? You think people are going to stop eating? Right? They're going to stop needing shelter. They're going to stop needing clothes and shit. I mean, some of my listeners can relate to this. A whole lot can't. But you know what? You got to fucking start opening your heads and, you know, really trying to, you know, put yourself mentally, if you can. Logically, you must. Into the position of people who don't have any fucking thing within the conditions that they're living in, and then really ask yourself, what the fuck is happening? And I'm not saying necessarily go through something like the theater of the oppressed, even though that works. I've done it. I've seen it. It can actually stimulate a hell of a lot of dialogue. But see, the thing about it is that's another thing that's hard to get people to do. The theater of the oppressed, I can't remember homie's name, but he came out of Brazil. And it puts you into a position where you are the subject. You are the target of oppression, repression, misogyny, racism. You are the form, you are the person who takes the prejudice. And it's a prejudice that you don't necessarily have to deal with. Now, you know, I support women's rights, but I don't consider myself a feminist, and I'm not comfortable with men using that term. You can support women's rights without identifying yourself as a feminist. I mean, I support rights for people in Tibet, but I'm not Tibetan. And to claim to be Tibetan and shit is ridiculous. I'm not Tibetan. That's crazy. And, you know, we have a lot of identity fucking, you know, issues like this. You know, I mean, what? Remember, Lou? We didn't get into it with them because I wanted to, and you were like, it's not worth it. But there were three young Native American men when her and I were in Seattle several days ago. And we had just come out of a cafe. Yeah, I know. We like to hang in cafes. So the fuck what? You know, we work on caffeine. And biscotti, right? And fucking when it's in the when we had change in our pockets, and motherfucking, you know, these three Native cats, they didn't have anything positive to say about black people. You know, they were talking amongst themselves, and it was really no point. And I agree with her now. You know, no point in confronting them about this, but they had nothing positive to say. Now, you know, I didn't hear nigga, didn't hear monkey, didn't have, you know, it wasn't like that. But they didn't have, and they were college students, and that's what really bugs me. You know, that they, no, we went out to name school. Even though it's a real fucking blip, though, to me, what particular building I saw them come out of in the university district. So I would just say that. But, you know, anyhow. There's another story I can talk about the university district. It's just, in many ways, that is a microcosm of what the fuck I'm talking about. But anyway, hold on. So, you know, they had nothing positive to say about black people. You know, Africans are lazy, this, that, and the other. But what got me and why I wanted to say something was the fact that while they're saying that black people aren't, you know, worth anything, they're rapping. Remember, you know, that they were rapping because we were still like a few people behind them because we had to walk to the same corner and wait for the same light in order to cross the road. And they started to spit, but they don't like black people, and they start taking all the mannerisms, you know, but they don't like black people. You know, that several years ago that happened to me. I was in Washington State again, right? You know, I was in Federal Way. I was at a Native family's home. Was there for a gathering. Some people I've gone to protest with and what have you in the past. And, you know, it's just a social gathering that I was invited to. It wasn't political. Someone said there was going to be a 49er and what have you. And so, yeah, I'm from the East Coast. Don't really do that. Black Indians don't really have any access to that. So I wanted to see. You know, they were watching BET. Most of the time I was there. But the same thing happened. You know, I'm not going to say I heard a whole lot of outright racism, but, you know, it was racism nonetheless. You know, why can't black people get their shit together? This, that, and the other. And I'm thinking, you know, wow, everything that these, you know, a lot of these people are saying, and it wasn't everybody, but a lot of what I heard, well, the same shit could be asked about natives. You're here first. Why can't you get your shit together? You're in the Marine Corps, Air Force, Army, Navy. Why can't you get your shit together? You're in the schools, you know, which is obvious. Because, like I said, these were three Native, you know, students. We know they were students because they were wearing all of their, you know, proudly, I suppose, their, with the T-shirts and the hoodies and what have you, right? But yeah. It's something when you see educated people of color who say things like that about other people of color without considering that, okay, you know, it's pretty obvious you had a bad fucking experience and now you just don't like black people. Or the only experience, well, I mean, it's the same thing. You know, basically your experience or your experiences with people of color and Africans in particular have been negative. And let's be psychologically fucking honest here. You have folks who may not have a particular opinion against a particular ethnic group, right? A negative opinion or any sort of opinion, one way or the other. Totally neutral. But have a bad run in, you know, with someone on the bus, online, shopping, and then start to judge other members of that same group by that encounter. People do this. But what irritates me is that we don't admit that we do this. You know, I mean, we do this, but you have to be able to cop on and say, hey, you know, am I really, you know, am I being a jerk here? You know, yeah, I mean, I've gotten into it with a lot of people, and it's really silly what it is that I get into people with. But, you know, what I have realized is that when I get into, you know, what seems like an okay conversation until I start asking something that is, you know, off the table, or as somebody put the other night, right, Luke, you know, out of the box or whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm not asking anything that we shouldn't be asking as a society. So what's the problem? Just like if you say, do this at a cocktail party, right, if you got the guts. You know, why is it that the United States is supposedly pulse racial and people keep pointing to President Obama as proof of this, right? Why is it that less, you know, every 28 hours you have black people being killed and a case like Browder, you know, committing suicide after being punished, penalized, tortured? You know, we haven't even talked about what sexually could have happened to him in there. And the, some of the brothers that I tried to talk to today about this, you know, to try to get on the show, cause I, you know, my wife gave me an iPod specifically for this. She's like, hey, I'm not using this anymore. You know, why don't you try to get interviews while you're in the street? Right? And it's like, and I have tried and I can't pin anybody down. You know, and it's like, what is this? Folks have a hell of a lot to say, but they don't want to be on the mic. But then they complain about the media. And they demand alternative media. Well, Intelligent Aboriginal Radio isn't, you know, it's alternative goddamn media. So is Bob Kincaid. You can find him at headonradio.com, right? So is Free Radio Kansas, which you can find at fightingcockfly.blogspot.com. You know, I mean, you got podcasts up the yin yang, but if you notice, here we go again. We go into this, you know, very shallow pool of knowledge that is taken as full knowledge. So when you say podcast today, for example, now, this is really an internet radio broadcast that is also released. Yeah, follow me now. I know we're going on a tangent, but roll with me. That is released as a podcast, but you can find this on pirate radio. You can find this streaming on the internet because there are folks out here who think it's worth hearing. And thank you for your efforts. Who, you know, post the show, put the audio out there, there was one fellow telling me in Florida, people were making CDs of some of these episodes and were, you know, handing them out that way because a lot of folks don't have internet service, right? Because that's how most Indian people who have heard of me, they either go to college and they have a computer or something, right? And they've heard about whatever, because we used to have listeners at Haskell and I haven't, you know, I don't know what's up with that anymore. But there is no goddamn internet service in the fourth world. In North America. There's hardly any water in the fucking fourth world. I mean, what? They cut water off from black people in Detroit. You don't hear anybody talking about that either. So how can they be down with the show? It's the same thing with, you know, I mean, it always elates me when someone in Africa is listening to this show. Or someone in mainland China is listening to this show. Because, you know, a lot of places, a lot of people, well, China, yeah, there's broadcasts wherever. But how many indigenous people have access? You know, so when I say a lot of things, you know, a lot of the folks who listen to the show, you know, they're like, yeah, well, I agree with you, this, that, and the other. They have background, you know, knowledge because they have, you know, first the willingness. Well, actually, no, let me reverse that. They have the means to look around. They have an internet connection. They have the money to get an iPhone, a computer, whatever. Because if you don't have any money, you don't have any of this. That's the bottom line. This is for something that people who have means. Bottom line. And they want to keep it that way. Excuse me. You know, they want to keep it that way. So, you got to have the means. And then, you know, secondly, which is equally important, these are not mutually exclusive, you got to have the will. You got to have the will to say, for example, to be a white person and to step out of yourself and say, well, damn, you know, as a white male, for example, as a white Christian male, and in the Anglophone world, and only in the Anglophone world, you know, a white Christian or self-identified Jewish male, yeah, I have a certain level of privilege. what is the privilege? Because you always hear white guys, I don't have a privilege. Again, they're speaking from their specific position. Because when you look at those white guys, you know, if they're not lying about anything and not exaggerating things, which is how most teabaggers do, right? They're poor. They have a hard time. Like, say, if you live where Bob Kincaid lives in Appalachia. And I mentioned Bob Kincaid because you need to listen to a show, hitonradio.com. Not just because I go on there, hitonradio.com. You know, he has to deal with a drug problem, right? Because his neighbors are on meth, right? Or they're on Oxycontin, like fucking Rush Limbaugh, some shit, you know, or they're drinking, like, you know, W. Bush or his wife, you know. Yeah, I mean, you know, any number of fucking people that we can look at of importance that have all of these goddamn problems, but see, but they're individuals. So when Glenn Beck, for example, makes a complete fool out of himself and says something stupid, he's an individual. He doesn't speak for all the white people. You know, when there's some Sean Toon, who is a cartoon, when you look at this fucking fool, I mean, has anybody told Sean Toon 911 that motherfucking Eric Casebolt, Corporal Eric Casebolt, has, you know, not really apologized, but said that he somehow, according to his lawyer, had to deal with a couple of suicides earlier in the day. And, you know, this fucked him up so much mentally that he was ready to pull guns on black kids and beat the shit out of one particular female who was only 14 wearing a bathing suit, to pull a gun on her and two other goddamn young kids and to yoke her hair up and shit like he was Simon Legree, you know. So it's like, hey, man. You know, but who would say, well, that sounds reasonable to me? That this person who turns out to be a school teacher who was totally defending all of this and wants to return to segregation, that, you know, she's being picked on. Because I've seen, and I've retreated, right, with relevant questions, you know, asking, you know, what is it about, you know, this particular, you know, country where this is okay? That you can have these kinds of comments, this kind of sentiment, and then if you raise it, somehow you're racist, you hate white people, or you don't want to have peace, which is what, you know, people of color will say, because, you know, they think that if you raise anything, that if you say anything, that you'll make these motherfuckers mad, and that they'll come after them, and take their little house, their little cul-de-sac, wherever the fuck they live, that their white neighbors will turn on them and shit, that, you know, if some angry black motherfucker like me says something, that is going to make shit tough for them. Well, as somebody who's been an Uncle Tom most of his goddamn life, I know what the fuck they're talking about. And what they're saying is true. But what's fucked up is that they don't come out and say any goddamn thing. Again, we're stuck with the fucking idea that, you know, where I live and what I see is the whole of the fucking world. So while I do my best to save my motherfucking ass to protect my bacon and shit, if that black kid gets fucked over, you know, gets fucked over, that black family gets burned out someplace else, well, you know what? That's not my particular problem because it's not happening close to me. So until it comes across my motherfucking lawn, I'm not going to worry about it. Now, they've got the entire, this, where I'm relating to, we had a young man here, at, you know, commit motherfucking suicide because the system basically murdered him. He was a black man, and they decided to motherfucking, you know, make his life hell. Just accuse him of any motherfucking thing, and, you know, if it fucks his life up, it fucks his life up. If it doesn't fuck his life up, well, we'll find a way to fuck his life up. You know, because that's the system, and that's what we goddamn do. And the system's off the rails any motherfucking way. Right? You know, I would like to know who the fuck the original police officers were that put him in this position in the first place. Why are they not being named? Why are they not being fucking put under investigation by Internal Affairs on how they fucking, where were the, he had that seen a judge at some goddamn point. You know, I've tried to tell people, they lose people in the system. They lose people in the system in the United States. There was a man who was in solitary for 2 motherfucking years. His toenails had turned inward and were fucking digging their way into his fucking, the bottom of his toes. I think he was in New Mexico. He was out of New Mexico, Arizona, right? Luke, you know, they forgot about him. They forgot about him. How about that Asian kid in California? The FBI, the DEA, or whatever the fuck it was, put him into a holding cell. Because they don't really put you in cages anymore, right? They put you in these fucking concrete and steel boxes. So they forgot that he was in there. They left him in there for 5 days. He almost died. No food, no fucking water. He was on the brink of death. So yeah, they awarded him some fucking money afterwards.
It shouldn't have happened in the goddamn first place. If you're going to go out here and damage the whole fucking rest of the world talking about you're going to spread democracy, but you can't even bring democracy to your own fucking country. Sergeant James Brown was part of that shit. He was defending democracy in Iraq. What was it? 2 or 3 tours he did, right? And, you know, one person, and I never went back and said anything to this person, and that's a ding on me. That's a ding on me that I didn't call this person out for this shit, but it's in my Twitter TL. It was more than a week ago, so I don't know. There's really no point in saying anything now. But, you know, for real, man, who gives a fuck about, you know, the fact that he was married to a white woman? I'm talking about Sergeant James Brown now, who was killed in Texas. You know, everything seems to be going on in fucking Texas. You know, they don't want women to have abortions over there, so they fucking vote. You know, men decide that they're going to make a fucking decision. You know, they execute innocent fucking people over there, and nobody's called to fucking account for this shit. You got open carry like a motherfucker down there. You know, people getting shot. You know, nobody cares, right? Nobody cares. You can't have black kids who live in the fucking, you know, vicinity, who go to the same school as the people who invited them to go to a fucking pool party. You know, if it got out of hand, you know what the cops could have done? They could have come there and said, okay, the party's over. Everybody goes home. Now, that's all the fuck they had to do. You know, I've been young. I've been loud, okay? And the cops have come, and they told us to go the fuck home. They didn't beat anybody up. They didn't taser anybody. Nobody got maced. Nobody got shot. And these are white cops. And these are people of color. And you know what? They just did their fucking job. But that was a long time ago. Now there's blood in the fucking water. Okay? And these cops realize that they're not going to do anything to them. And they're power tripping. You know it. And I know it. But we're not paying attention to that as a nation. There's no million white person march to stop police brutality. See, we're focused on Caitlyn Jenner. And people are mad with Bob Costas for pointing out that this is not the biggest fucking thing going on in sports. He's right. I mean, what was it? Michael Sam, whatever. That was the other one, you know, because he came out, which is a bigger deal because he's playing. He's active. Oh, I'm sorry. Lupe's telling me I need to get back to the Village People thing. Well, look, I'm not making a judgment call on Bruce Jenner because he was in Can't Stop the Music. I'm not making a fucking judgment call. But I'm just pointing out that this was 1980, not motherfucking 2015. And, you know, he took a bit of a motherfucking chance, right? You know, as a sports person. And he was hassled for it at the motherfucking time for being in that movie. People did clown him for being in that film. Because, like, what did I just say? My mother was like, that was a faggot movie because the Village People was in it. But see, this is where I'm going to, again, and this is why I don't know how else to do this but to go on a tangent. The Village People, now, there's a documentary, and of course it's Canadian, which means that they're going to ask questions that Americans don't motherfucking ask. Real talk. Real talk. You know, because it's not their country. You dig what I'm saying? They're looking at it from the outside. And it's easier to talk about somebody else. You know what I'm saying? So, but motherfucking, there's a documentary flying around. I encourage you to look at it. It's called The Disco Revolution. And it's really, it's not a music documentary, even though that's probably where you'll find it. It's really political. And what this crew points out, and the majority of the people who I consider to be the brighter minds in this thing, you know, the entertainers really leave a lot to fucking be desired. I have to say that. You know, I mean, y'all look good, great at your fucking age and shit, man. And, you know, all that is cool. But, you know, y'all have no motherfucking credibility on the goddamn intelligence scale. You know, going by what the fuck y'all said, you know, unless it's just simple cowardice on y'all's part. And what I'm talking about here is that what's left of the Village People. And I can't say for sure if these were the original cats because I don't remember. I'm not into music that much. Seems like most of them, or some of them anyway, Felipe, you know, the Puerto Rican who was wearing a war bonnet and shit. Because remember, this is 1980, so, you know, there was no internet, so there, you know, if Indians were mad about it, it was only because maybe a local newspaper spoke to somebody, or one or two people got into the newspapers because of a protest.
nobody at the time was really hollering about Felipe, whatever his last name is, running around, you know, not to say that he is an Indian, because obviously he's Taino, he's Puerto Rican, but, you know, Puerto Ricano, yeah, Boricua, but motherfucking, nah, you know, war bonnet, nah, man, you don't, it's just something you don't do. But, you know, we weren't complaining about that. But anyway, because if I was there, I certainly would have asked him that. But he was pretty adamant, and so was the cat that was, because I don't know the names. I mean, you probably do. I know my wife does. The one who did the construction work, that they totally downplayed and decried the what I considered the fucking reality that the village people were a gay group, a gay band. They were adamant that they were not a gay group, that they were a party band, or are, because they still tour, they still work, right? A party group, a party band, or whatever. Okay, nobody wants to use labels anymore. Okay, fine. But in 1980, I don't remember any of them jumping up and down and saying, you know, stop all the fucking sales and shit. We don't want these checks any goddamn more because we're a gay group and you guys, we're a party group and you guys got it all wrong because you're identifying us with gay people. Now, anybody that's ever been to fucking New York, at least before they gentrified all this shit, because I didn't recognize the fucking thing the last time I went, you know, you had your gay sectors in what is called Greenwich Village, but you always did. But it's always had the reputation, especially the main strip, which I heard now is just lousy, Christopher Street, right? When you pass... Well, you were just there. What? You didn't go. I know it was on the west side of Greenwich Village, but that's all. And it goes over to the water, right? Which they totally developed. There's another film, Gay Sex in the 70s. That's it. Gay Sex in the 70s. I was going to say the 60s, but it's the 70s. Gay Sex in the 70s, you know, before the AIDS crisis. Before the AIDS crisis hit the United States, really, because... That's all anybody was really concerned about. You know, I mean, you had some clubs over there. The film, which is something else we can talk about, right? Because this is relevant if we're going to talk about homophobia and how this society views homosexuality in general. Cruising. Now, Cruising is on my top 10 films in terms of, you know, really murky subjects. And I also am a big fan of the director. He's the same gentleman who directed, what? Well, I'm talking about Ream Freakin'. He did The Exorcist. He also did Boys in the Band. I'm sorry, Lou. Look, what I'm trying to get to here is you... are, you know, looking at this Bruce Jenner thing, because this is what Bob Costas was talking about. I believe him when he said that he wasn't slamming her because, you know, she's made her changes. It's nobody's business, really. But at the same time, you can completely understand why, you know, the GBLTQ politicized community, and I mean that, the politicized community, okay, not gay people who are really living their fucking lives. I'm talking about the political gay community, which doesn't recognize people of color for the most part. Doesn't recognize indigenous people at all. Okay? And only looks at getting into the military and getting married as being the be-all and end-all of the fucking argument. And I'm sorry for those of you who don't like what I'm saying, but that is politically where it's at. That is politically where it's at. See, the GBLT community, if they were serious about their fucking politics, they would be on this, I was getting ready to say Kashimi Powell, but that's not, which is another tragic case, but it's Khalif Rada. Because what happens in the prison system? You know, they're not talking about transgendered violence, you know, for the most part, if there are people of color. Because how many people of color who are transgender are being stabbed and shot out here in the street and beaten to death? But we hear about the white ones. The mainstream press talks about that. The mainstream gay press talks about that. You know, and I'm not saying that they do not bring up racism in the gay community. They do. But they really don't really talk about it. You know, because there is racism in the fucking gay community. Just like there's racism every goddamn fucking place else. You know. And when I know I'm going on a million fucking tangents with this, But I just find it really fucking hard that, you know, people are getting on this when there's really always been question about Bruce Jenner. And again, I'm not identifying him as gay. I'm identifying him as a woman, you know, unless she comes out, you know, identifying as gay. But okay, that's another one. Thanks, Luke. Miley Cyrus, who I know nothing about other than the fuck that her father's the honky tonk guy, right? Hoochie coochie, whatever the fuck he's talking about. Achy breaky heart, whatever the fuck, you know. I'm not. You have to ask like someone like Bob Kincaid or something. You know, it's not what I know. But I know who she is because she's in the news all the motherfucking time. You know, I mean, if I know anything at all about entertainers, it's only because they're in the fucking news. And I will get back to these entertainers in this documentary in a minute. But she's come out as genderqueer now. And, you know, I have to say this. You know, I'm not against it, but it is confusing. But why is it that, you know, she's able to come out and make a statement like this? You know, are we really asking ourselves about this objectively? And it has nothing to do with political correctness. We're simply not even able to have a fucking discussion now without somebody getting offended. You know, there's a BBW, if not really supersized BBW, test somebody. I can't remember her name, but Lupe showed me in the, what was it, the Daily Mail, right? Because we were looking at the fucking photos. And she made a comment. Now, like I said, you know, she's a white woman, and she's a big girl. I think she's fucking gorgeous. But see, somebody's going to get mad about me saying that, right? Well, look, you know, men of color and black men, yeah. We tend to like women who are on the thick side. That's a generalization. But hey, we grow up in cultures where women have larger, curvy fucking physiques. So, you know, white guys don't like that. They want string bean. They want Triggy, right? Because that's what's in. Even though when you go to Europe and shit, and you go to, you know, certain other places, you know, like Brazil, right? You know, fucking, if you don't have culo, man, who? You're nobody. And if you don't think it's like that in the black community, it is. You know, because I have a sister. She, you know, complained about her ass not being as big as her girlfriend's, and she didn't get the same attention that other motherfuckers get. See, now, I said that in a conversation not too long ago. And two sisters really came at me, and then I asked them, well, then explain to me why so many women then are getting these, you know, posterior injections with industrial glue and silicone and shit. Explain that to me. And not just in the United States, but all throughout motherfucking Latin America now where people have money, right? So you're talking about Chile, Colombia, especially because of the drug money, right? You know, they had no answer for that. They had no answer for that. You know, they also wanted to deny that hair straightening and skin bleaching and the green contacts the one of them were wearing, you know, had anything to do with trying to be white. Yes, it does. These are symbols of colonialism. And if you would, and you had not seen them, you would not know about them. Which is what I'm trying to say. When you get a white person that is ridiculously fucking bigoted, all the fuck they know is what they see or what they, you know, what they see and hear and experience around them viscerally and what they see now on this fucking internet. Because you might as well consider television, telly, right, the fucking internet. Because there is no motherfucking television anymore. Everything is the internet. Everything comes across the worldwide fucking web, comes through fucking satellites and shit. So it's like, hey, let's get fucking realistic. The news media that is basically now internet fucking based, because I rarely ever fucking see anybody read a fucking newspaper any longer. I mean, I used to be able to go to the news agent where I grew up, back in North Philly, right? And it was like, man, I don't know, anywhere from 80 to 125 fucking newspapers. And when I went to New York, you know, to visit relatives, there was always a newsstand someplace. And there was always somebody reading a paper. There's always news litter. You used to see that. You don't see that any fucking more. And it's not so much that, well, everything's gone electronic. I mean, that's obvious. But one of the reasons that they wanted things to slide completely electronically, because it leaves out the poor person who doesn't have the iPhone, who doesn't have the notebook computer, right? Doesn't have a desktop, doesn't have money, knowledge, or the time, even maybe, because they're working three fucking jobs to sit around and look at this kind of shit. So the majority of people now, if they are electronically connected, which is a must, it's hard to get a job now without a cell phone, and it's even harder now without, you know, email. And if you don't give them your Facebook motherfucking account, you may not even fucking get hired. So, you know, majority of people are getting their news from Facebook, and Facebook knows this shit, and so do the intelligence services, so does the federal government. Everybody understands that now, right? Which is one of the reasons why I don't bother with fucking Facebook, because it's a cesspool. Like, I never really used to go on Craigslist. I'm not buying anything online, so what the fuck am I going on Craigslist for? You know, it was a hard site to navigate any motherfucking way, you know, to me, when I last looked at it. And it just seemed to be a whole lot of fucking ads for bullshit. So, you know, and arguments and shit between people in comments. So I was like, what the fuck? But how many people, this is where they would spend 8 hours a goddamn day on Craigslist. So now you got people who spend 8, 10, 12 hours. People stop having sex in the middle of fucking sex now to answer their goddamn Facebook shit. When their phone goes ding, right? So if all the fuck you know is wherever the fuck you live, like some small little goddamn place, or some small little fucking, you know, box that you put yourself into because you're scared to go across the street or whatever the fuck. And let's be honest, too. There are people who are in positions because of where they are. They cannot go across the street. And I grew up like that, and it's a fucking reality. And see, and this is where, like, the white bigot, you know, this is where their weight comes from. Because, you know, they've all driven through bad neighborhoods, and those of us who have lived in bad neighborhoods know. When you see certain motherfuckers on certain corners or standing on certain stoops or on certain fucking vestibules, you don't go in there. Because these fucking guys are up to no goddamn good. They're vultures. They're hanging around looking for prey. That's true. But you know what's funny? I've been through all fucking white neighborhoods and shit that were working class, and I saw exactly the same goddamn thing. Go all fucking through Pennsylvania, you'll see exactly the same fucking thing, all white. We got towns here, it's all white, and like maybe 10-15% Latino, because they're doing the, you know, the factory work and the other, you know, fucking unforgiving and unrespected work, right? Is that a word, unrespect? It is now. You know, cleaning toilets and shit. You know, the stuff that a lot of fucking people won't do. Now, poor white people will goddamn do it because a job's a fucking job. But you know what I'm talking about. You know, the other 10% who live in that goddamn community that don't work because they don't need to. They're living off of their, you know, the landed gentry. They're living off of their retirement, you know, if they're lucky. But they're basically living off of dividends, stocks, residuals, right? You know, interest, that kind of shit. Investments, you know, residuals, right? So they don't give a fuck about what's going on in town, right? Until their favorite fucking crab house and shit is about to close. Because, you know, there's nobody going in there but these motherfuckers and shit. And, you know, the rest of the town can't afford it. And they've been, you know, able to keep their fucking nose in the air like that for a long time. But the economy's fucking bad. Even the people with money don't fucking go in there any goddamn way. And one of the reasons they don't go is that they got to leave their good car outside the street that in the neighborhood that is fucking gone to seed. But see, nobody says, well, you know, the economy is fucking like this because we're putting all this shit into trying to stop what the fuck is the total chaos that's going on. That's a goddamn tangent. This shit with the Islamic State, Daesh, ISIL, whatever the fuck you want to call them, these crazy fascist motherfuckers that are totally running roughshod over the entire fucking Western Asian motherfucking region. Okay, they have now totally displaced Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, it is now being reported in the mainstream fucking news agencies, basically doesn't fucking exist. Now, it didn't exist any goddamn way until the fucking rest created them. Look up the Mujahideen and then look at what happened after they took over. Look up the Mujahideen, look up the Taliban, look up Al-Qaeda. And you'll see that these are the same guys, those who have survived all of this shit, that have basically morphed from one thing to another. They saw another goddamn chance to go after the family that runs Syria. And they knew that they could get Western backing, and they did. And the West knew that they were Islamists, and they gave them all this shit anyway, right? There was video in the UK Guardian, it was mostly the UK press, that, you know, they were showing white men, they didn't know what country they were from, they were being touted as being British, but they didn't, you know, there was speculation, but no clear, you know, idea on what nation these men represented. Well, what were three, you know, Anglos doing down there in Syria on the ground, you know, in fatigues and whatever, right? They looked like they were there to, they looked like they were at work to me. You know, what the fuck were they doing there? And then they tacitly admitted, oh yeah, well, by the way, we've been on the ground kind of helping them with this shit. And now what? No, it's the same thing with Africa. Now, Al-Qaeda wasn't in Africa until all of this bullshit started under Bush. They're there now. But now they're replaced by Boko fucking Haram, right? And now the Islamic State is running with that shit. So eventually they'll either merge, you know, they'll either patch over like gangs do, or they'll fight each other. And from what we see with Islamic State, they're so motherfucking fanatical, they don't care. You know, they'll fight any goddamn buddy, obviously. And, you know, they're really like a bunch of fucking cockroaches and shit. And, you know, I don't have to fucking be polite talking about these goddamn murderous bastards. Fuck them. Daesh, Al-Qaeda, these are all fucking fascists, man. And see, and people who are like, well, I don't know if I want to go that far and call them fascists. Oh, yeah, why? Because they're Muslim? They're fucking fascists, man. Look at the way that they're destroying their fucking societies. They're just like Hitler. They're wiping out and rewriting the fucking past, which is what the Huckabees want to do, right? Which is what the Rupert Murdochs would do if they could get a fucking chance. You know, I mean, I mentioned J. Edgar Hoover here earlier. You know, that motherfucker was, the more you learn about, I mean, I got two books on him here, you know, in the studio. And it's like, you know, the more that you fucking, what, one of them's missing. Yeah, I know. There's been books missing from my little library over here, which I don't mind. I just appreciate it. If any of you are listening, you can put the volumes back when you're done. You know, in the condition in which you borrowed them, please. But, that's a peeve. You know, you loan a book somewhere and it comes back not the goddamn way you loan it. You know, these fuckers wouldn't exist if they hadn't involved themselves in this shit that was going on in there anyway. You know, I mean, Saddam would have fallen eventually. And if they were really serious about getting rid of him, then they wouldn't have supported him after, you know, Desert Storm. Look up Norman Schwarzkopf Jr., not his father Sr., who helped set up Iraq and Iran. And Saudi. I mean, he was a peripheral element there, but he was mostly connected to Iran because that's where Storm and Norman grew up. And he was pretty pissed because he understood the politics. Like I said, he grew up over there. He understood the politics. His father was a big wig over there, okay? After World War One, helped set up all the shit, well, after World War II, helped set up all the fucking bullshit that's going on right now in terms of petroleum. In terms of political power over there and political distribution and these motherfucking borderlines that were set in World War One. In which case you can look at Sir John Philby, in which case you can look at T.E. Lawrence, right? And you should. I encourage you to look these names up and to do an evaluation on this history so you can understand what the fuck I'm talking about. And then you can look at how the Germans were involved in Syria, in Lebanon, in Iraq, right? They tried in Iran, but it didn't work. But they certainly got their claws in Palestine and what have you. And because there was a fascist there already. You already had fascists there. Fascism is a respecter of no goddamn ethnicity. And you know, it's total racism to say that Daesh, ISIL, you know, whatever the fuck you want to call these murderous fucks, you know, that they can't be fascists because they're not white. Well, what? They're too stupid to... I mean, come on, that's dumb. See, that's stupid. That is fucking stupidity. To say that, oh, well, Idi Amin couldn't be a fascist because he was black. That Mugabe couldn't be a fascist because he's black and he used to be and that he was a socialist revolutionary. Well, you know, so was Mussolini. As I said, you got to understand what the fuck you're talking about. You know, the fascist movement uses the term workers, but it doesn't mean workers at all. I mean, when Hitler, you know, joined the motherfucking German Workers' Party as a spy for the fucking German government, you know, they were using workers, but they weren't talking about workers at all. You know, they had started off like that because they went to the beer halls and what have you in order to fucking get members. Disillusioned, unemployed, angry fucking veterans who couldn't make it in post-World War Germany. Well, frankly, nobody could goddamn make it, but they felt that they were owed more, right? And they were going to the extremes of, you know, blaming the communists for everything, what have you. Now, there was already Judeophobia, you know, in the group. But when Hitler comes in as a government agent, the Judeophobia got worse. It became, what was something that was marginal, became forefront. And they forgot all about the workers, and he started bringing in people with money. And then he eventually quit the goddamn army, right? Quit the intelligence service, and just became the motherfucking head of the group. And kept going, because he realized, what the fuck, you know, I can do this. And German intelligence said, fuck it, let him do it. Because they can go out there and beat up the Jews, and beat up the communists, and beat up the fucking social democrats and shit, and tear apart the gypsies, and do whatever the fuck, you know, and we don't have to get our hands dirty. And that's exactly what the fuck happened. That's exactly what the fuck happened. There were very few Germans who were Nazis, who were fascist supporters, or who were fascist car-carrying members, who were prosecuted for assault and murder and other crimes against the citizens of Germany under the Weimar Republic. They were not. On the other hand, communists were executed, you know, by lynching, by the firing squad, or by that favorite, you know, European thing, beheading. Because, you know, people have this idea that a lot of my critics in particular, that only Muslims behead people. And it's like, you've never heard of the fucking guillotine, right? Now, everything I'm talking about sounds like, you know, he's just rambling. But am I? Because we've been really concentrating on Caitlyn Jenner. When, like I'm saying, you know, we can look back to a lot of motherfucking denial in terms of this entire fucking society. And denial is pretty much what I'm getting to here. Because, you know, I mean, there's ignorance, right? In terms of living in your own fucking bubble. Sometimes it's one that you make. Sometimes it's one that you are fucking placed into. If you're a black man, you're placed into a fucking bubble. If you're a woman, you're placed into a bubble. Now, if you're a white woman, your bubble is a higher fucking rank than that native or African woman, right? Or Desi woman, or Asian woman. And, you know, and Asian women, you know, they occupy a very special place within this shit, because not only are they a model minority, right? You have the whole preference for Asian women, because there's this assumption in the Anglophone world that Asian women are passive, and that Asian women will put up with bullshit that, you know, spoiled American women will not put up. I mean, I used to have a supervisor. He was Russian. And he used to tell us, he goes, you know, Russian women are really bad. They're really bad. And we'd be like, why? He goes, oh, they don't follow orders. Yeah. Right? And I've said this to people. You know, you can say the same thing to a Chinese man. Ask a Chinese man who's married to a Chinese woman if they're passive, if they're easy. You know, you hear that dragon lady shit, but see, that whole point of the dragon lady is to denounce those women, to minimize those women, to put those women in their place. Now, yes, that can be abused. You know, that can certainly goddamn be abused. You know, the angry black woman, you know, is real and it's legit. But that too can be fucking abused. And we don't really pay attention to the fact that how many men, and this is very unfair of the women's movement, see, to not, you know, raise the fact that there are many men who are sent to prison for rape on false accusations, you know, by the person who is saying that they're a victim, and it turns out that nothing happened at all. All was consensual, and they knew, like Iago and Othello, that this was the best way to motherfucking get this person back. I mean, look at the near the end of Watermelon Man. And for those of you who are too young to remember that film, it was Melvin Pan People's first theatrical film in this country. Because he vamped off to France and you know, won awards and shit, and really embarrassed the motherfucking United States. Since this black man was given a chance to direct films, feature films in France, when he couldn't even fucking direct a commercial in the States. So, you know, they did bring him back here to do, you know, things every now and again. But he and guy from Cambridge, which, again, if you're not of a certain age group, you're not going to know who I'm talking about. And Estelle Parsons, right? they did a thing called Watermelon Man, where, you know, white cat wakes up one in the middle of the night to, you know, to relieve himself, and looks in the mirror and realizes that he's turned black overnight. So his wife flips out. I mean, it's total satire. But yeah, I was just reminded by Stacey Herbert from the Kaiser Report.
that, you know, people are not understanding satire. Because, you know, I put out something about Ted Cruz making a comment about Native American rain dances and witchcraft or whatever. And it was satire, but people took it seriously. And she made me cop on to the fact that, and I pointed this out myself on my own goddamn Twitter feed, that, people in this country do not goddamn understand satire anymore. Laughing would not have an audience today. Laughing would not work today. Rowan and Martin would not work today, which I think is a fucking shame because that shit was as subversive as fucking hell, you know. But it wouldn't work today because, frankly, Americans are just too fucking dumbed down for it to work today. And, you know, we need to really consider, like, what the fuck that says about the United States, that you go from intelligent media to, you know, the total focus on Caitlyn Jenner, which, again, it's not to say that there's anything wrong with Caitlyn Jenner. There's nothing wrong with Caitlyn Jenner. It's just the focus on this is ridiculous.
And that's where Bob Costas was coming from, and I agree with him. We just had a young man here commit suicide because of what this system did to him, and you know what? Nobody gives a shit. Black people being wiped out here, nobody gives a shit. Indian women missing from the Canadian-American border. Does anybody care? Do they even care in Canada? No. Does anybody care about the Spanish-speaking Indian women that are missing on the U.S.-Mexican border? No. But, you know, I'm supposed to drop everything. And you know, and the same thing was done. My gay friends are political, right? But, you know, for those who are not my friends, but who are their friends, you know, there's been a lot of people that have been kicking my ass up over my shoulders talking about, you know, I'm anti-gay, I hate transgender people. And it's like, no. But, you know, if you already have your mind made up, you know, see, I'm copying Tom Horn now. If you've already made your mind made up, there's really nothing I can fucking say, is there? And see, really, a lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon. Because remember when we had Bruce LaBruce on the show? And I wanted to interview him anyway, but at the same time that this happened was the Dolce & Gabbana boycott, which didn't work, right? Because it took about 5 minutes for people around the world to realize that this is bullshit. People have a right to a fucking opinion. Now, even if their opinions are fucking ridiculous half the time, but their opinion wasn't ridiculous. They're just saying that they didn't support gay marriage because they just thought that there was this other shit to be worried about. And they're not a couple anymore, Dolce & Gabbana. They started off that way. And they actually have adopted kids. Or at least they're raising children. But they adopt. Now, you have to understand something. I've mentioned this before, and it's hard to explain this to a lot of Americans, but, you know, European conservatives, and I believe that they are conservatives politically. European conservatives are not like American conservatives. You know, they get hung up on shit. But you hear about religious people in Italy and Spain and in France getting hung up on, you know, Catholics, right? Fundamentalist Catholics, Opus Dei type motherfuckers who get caught up on, you know, gay people and shit like that. The average conservative over there, he just doesn't want to give a goddamn dime to the poor. They want the fucking immigrants to go away and all this type of shit. If you're in Spain, they want the Carlos regime to fucking come back, right? You know, it's that type of fucking thing. You know, they want all the communists out. You know, that type of goddamn thing. But, you know, people's personal bullshit, they're not goddamn concerned unless it, you know, opens you to blackmail and fraud and all the types of fucking things. You know, in other words, is it affecting this motherfucker's job? Does it affect this male or female doing their job? Because, you know, I still talk about this. The current affair, which isn't on the air anymore. But when I used to live in New Jersey, fucking there used to be a show with Bill O'Reilly, another fucking hypocrite. You know, talking about throat grabs and shit. This fucking guy grabs his wife by the throat in front of their child. But, you know, he's out here talking about parenting and morals. You know, and Republican morals. So, you know, fuck Bill O'Reilly. But he used to be on a show called The Current Affair. And they made a big, big, big fucking megillah about the... they made two megillahs. One in Brazil and one in France. And I don't know, maybe if you go on YouTube, you can find this trash. But what it came down to was they were stopping people on the street in Paris and asking them if they felt offended by the fact that Francois Mitterrand openly spent Christmas with his legal wife and child, or his legal wife and family. And he would spend New Year's with his mistress and their daughter. And the average person in France said, "Who cares? And who the fuck are you? Why do you care?" Right? because they, you're not French, and why do you give a shit? They did that in Brazil, too. They went down there for Carnival. They got video footage of the president at that time of Brazil. Can't remember his name. Corrupt son of a bitch, but, you know, I can't remember his name. And they had him, he had his arm around the waist of this really gorgeous chica who had, you know, the feathers, all this shit. You know, it's Carnival, right? You know, culo, you know, all of it, right? And he's holding up a bottle of champagne and cheering the country, hey, you know, Carnival. So whoever this chick was from A Current Affair was like, you know, holding a video monitor up to him and saying, asking him, you know, demanding to know where his wife was. And he and his body man, you know, they're looking at the thing and they just kind of smirked. And they're like, oh, yeah, this was a few nights ago. They're like, well, where was your wife? He's like, I don't know. It's Carnival. Now, you know, was this man fucking around on his wife? You know, who the fuck knows? Probably. You know, I mean, a whole lot of men have a hard time being monogamous. Oh, well, let me rephrase that. A whole lot of people have a hard time being monogamous in general. You know, putting this shit on men is ridiculous. I mean, I saw this one goddamn thing that said 67% of married women have admitted to having a fling or a one-time, you know, an affair. It might have been more, but today we're probably more honest. It was like, it was less for men. It was in the 50s, but it was high nonetheless. I don't remember what it was, 56, 56, something like that. But, you know, the women were just more honest. Monogamy obviously is a fucking problem. It's not that people can't be, you know, it, obviously, if it wasn't a fucking problem, it wouldn't be an issue, right? But, you know, the society, you know, that lockbox bubble again says that only men, you know, fuck around. Oh, that's not true. That's not true. You know, that's that's just not true. You know, I mean, that's a lot of bullshit. But there's an assumption of guilt and there's an assumption of innocence. And if you have somebody who goes out here with the starry-eyed, doe-eyed view of, well, I'm going to fall in love and we're just going to be me and this person and that's it, and then they get their feelings hurt when reality smacks them in the keister, well, then, I mean, hey, you can hate all relationships, you can hate love and all that kind of shit, you can write a fucking song, do a poem, whatever. It is what the fuck it is. It happens to us all. And it's part of growing up. I mean, I suppose when you get, you know, past 40 or so, or in your late 30s, and you start to mature a little bit, and you kind of have an understanding of what it is that you want, what it is you can give to somebody, and you have basically built up some kind of respect and knowledge about yourself. And if you can hook up with somebody else that's at that same level, you know, then you're good to go. Now, if you're still searching and you run into somebody that's searching, to me, that's ideal. That's the whole romantic thing about it. You experience life together. You grow together. But, you know, let's be real. You know, there's going to be slips with all kinds of goddamn things. You know, there's going to be slips in attitudes, slips in feelings. And, you know, with this world especially, people do not live in the same goddamn town anymore. You know, you don't live exactly where your mother and father, you know, grew up or whatever. So you come into a situation where you have choices. And when I was talking about Miley Cyrus here, you know, earlier, I meant just that. You have choices. So she's coming out now, and she can choose to be gender neutral. You couldn't have done that in the 80s. They were just talking about that in the 80s because of Boy George. And if it wasn't for Boy George, we probably wouldn't even be having this conversation right now. You know? But, you know, what I'm trying to get to is, Bob Costas was right, because Loopy's telling me to wind this up, to wrap this up, that Bob Costas is right. You know, something that is, you know, actually normal. And I'm not going to make a natural fucking argument. Two men or two women cannot make a child natural. So, you know, natural argument, gay people have to get over that shit and be able to have a discussion. It is not natural. Right? You can't procreate that way. And scientifically, that's the whole point of, that's the main fucking point of sex. Okay? I mean, there's only a few creatures that actually do sex for pleasure. And it just seems to be primates. But see, primates, because of original position, think that they're the only motherfucking species. So, you know, that opinion then, you know, on a scientific basis, you know, they don't want to hear it, and you hate gay people. No. See, I will, again, try to clarify. homosexual behavior. And again, matter of fact, you know, Gore Vidal said the same shit since I mentioned him earlier. Homosexuality as a function, right? As a behavior, which is the way Gore Vidal put it, is normal. It's normal behavior, right? It is normal to see two male dogs, two male cats, you know, two male whatever in nature, you know, have relations. Now, obviously, it's not for procreation. Okay. You know, if they could speak, maybe they could tell us specifically on what's going on with them in their minds and spirits and shit, why they're dealing with this. But, you know, the bottom fucking line is it's normal behavior. You know, is it natural? Well, then you have to have a discussion on what the fuck nature means then. But, you know, there is no procreation coming out of that. But it is entirely normal and in some cases maybe even expected. Again, we're talking about extreme circumstances where males are put together and there's no women. Where women are put together where there's no males. You have, you know, conditions then where psychologically, emotionally, people may become bisexual. You know, and they're performing, you know, homosexual acts, if we want to be real blunt, right? Or they're engaging in homosexual behaviors. But if you ask them if they're quote-unquote gay, which is a cultural understanding, a cultural term, which has changed. You know, the understanding of gay, you know, the term gay is really a Victorian term. It meant somebody that was bohemian, who was not, you know, normal, whatever that's supposed to mean, right? The demi-monde, right? You know, the artists and what have you, you know, the poets, and obviously the men who were effeminate and the women who liked to wear ties and smoke cigars. You know, we never really like to admit that the decisions that we make and that the conclusions that we come down to come or are based on our visual experiences. And that we really have, unless we have some, you know, in, you know, there's something in us to look outside of ourselves, which is where we go into the creative realm, where we go into poetry, dance, and forms of expression, where we try to look beyond the curve, beyond the pale, where we try to look to see what's beyond us. Now, you know, there's a lot of talk about that in religion, but no, see, religion sticks to it's exactly what the Latin implies. It binds you. You know, so people make that line, spirituality. But yes, that's it. You know, you open a little more. You go and you look a little more. And if we're really going to start dealing, because I really wasn't talking about Caitlyn Jenner. It was the attention that's put on Caitlyn Jenner so that we can get into conversations about who wants to fuck who. When really, technically now, she's straight. She's living as a woman. And unless she says anything otherwise, I'm gonna refer to her and treat her as a woman. Same thing I did with Chelsea Manning, who has no business being in prison. Who is braver than any goddamn buddy, okay? For doing what the fuck she's been doing this whole motherfucking time in the joint. Because what I was going to say earlier, you know, I don't give a fuck about Orange is the New Black. That's just pro-prison propaganda. And those of you who fucking continue to watch that shit and continue to clown me, or try to clown me, because really you're trying. The only fucking clowns out here, y'all. You're motherfucking out here telling me that I must support this transgendered actress. That I must support her because she's in this show. No, I support her. I don't support the show. And I don't support her choice of wanting to participate in it either. You're a black transgendered woman with all the shit that's going on to black women in prison. You think representing that on that motherfucking show was helping any goddamn thing? That show was out here to fucking really get the point across that jail isn't all that bad. It's just one more piece of society. They've opened that door already. But if you've lived in the black community, if you've lived in the native community and shit, you've already had that motherfucking door open for you. Be honest, how many of you who really fucking have a ghetto experience in North America can really say that you were not told at some motherfucking point you are gonna go to the joint? And how many cats came to the fucked up conclusion that you will be able to get a girl, that you will be able to get respect, that you were able to fucking now be a tough guy, right? That you would not be an outsider like every fucking buddy else, that you fucked up in school on purpose and got in trouble. Because you purposely ran with the wrong kids, you got both parents at home, you're not being abused at home, all the fuck you have to do is go to school. I'm being real serious, because you got cats out here, man, who have no fucking reason to get involved in criminal life. But they get involved anyway because they think they're missing out on something. They think that this shit is cool. They think that, hey, you know, if I get in here and I start getting these fucking tattoos and flashing gang signs, I'll get pussy, man. You know, then I get money, and then I get a gold chain, and then I get this and that, and I'll stand around all day talking about I'm doing something. Really, I ain't doing shit. See, but poisoning my motherfucking community, poisoning my motherfucking self, right? Mentally, physically, and spiritually. But see, hip-hop doesn't want to take responsibility for this either. And no, we can't just say, well, it's the fault of hip-hop and all the artists. No, it's the fault of the white dudes and shit like the motherfuckers that was running and took, eventually, Death Row Records. Look at Welcome to Death Row if you think I'm fucking joking. And see how white people came into a fucking black-owned company. A 100% black-owned company. Yeah, the funding for the shit was shady, but hey, whatever. All right, it happened. That's how Denzel Washington got his motherfucking start. It was, you know, from certain, you know, brother in the joint who figured that he was going to try to go legit with his motherfucking money, right? And that's how Suge Knight got his motherfucking dough. And when they got into that bullshit, the white guys who knew business came in there and took that whole motherfucking thing from them. Because they were so hooked up into that gangster shit and trying to be real. Guys got a real fucked up thing. Because the white guy's saying, well, hey, we're not going to be able to sell this until you get real. And then, you know, because of the pressure that they were getting, like in terms of Snoop Dogg, I mean, he was getting in trouble damn near every other month. And it got to be clear that it wasn't him who's necessarily doing anything. Trouble was following him around because they were looking for something to put on him. And then it started to get to the point where the more trouble that these cats got into, I mean, come on, they already named that motherfucking shit Death Row. I mean, how many fucking rappers are naming themselves after gangsters? I mean, didn't you just hear yesterday the fake Rick Ross just got picked up for marijuana? Races, genders, and marital status. You know, they stopped him initially because they said that his windows were tinted too motherfucking dark. And then they smelled weed, so then that was it. You know, Rick Molly Ross, right? Put something in your drink, she don't even know it. Rick, ex-cop. Ex-corrections officer names himself after a major fucking drug dealer, you know. Yeah, not the real Rick Ross, the fake Rick Ross. And, you know, why is this shit okay? You know, what did I hear already about that? Oh, man. You know, he got caught, man. Look at that shit. They think this shit is funny. You know, I mean, people really do not want to admit that we are acting like fucking juveniles. Black, white, and otherwise. You know, the majority of us. That's why I'm bringing up Caitlyn Jenner, because there were people who everybody had an opinion about that, but nobody said anything about Browder. Nobody I know, unless I brought it up, said anything about Khalif Browder over the past few days, except for Luke. That's it. Nobody. Not even my wife. Nobody. Okay? Nobody. And of course, I hang around the majority of white folks, but nobody fucking raised it. And then, you know, the brothers and sisters that I do know, when I did see them, they didn't talk about it either. I kept hearing about Caitlyn Jenner. That's not the number one problem in the United States. That's not what should be on the lips of everybody. You know, not. She made a statement. She came out. She's on the cover of a fucking magazine. And now she's getting a major fucking sports award. Basically for dealing with her own personal, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with the sports world anymore. Because she's not involved in sports any fucking. So, yeah. That's, you know, basically what I want to talk about. You know, is that, you know, the majority of us are not willing to admit to ourselves that our, you know, perspective is limited to what the fuck we know. See, and we start making, you know, real grand judgments. I mean, if you want to make a universal judgment, you can say the torture is wrong. You can say that killings by drone when innocent people who are not combatants are killed. You know, you can talk about that, right? See, that's a universal clear-cut wrong. You know, violence in all of its forms is wrong. Wrongful convictions are wrong. You know, illegal and unlawful detention is wrong. Leaving Albert Woodfox in the motherfucking box for more than 40 years and shit in the United States that claims to be free is wrong. And we could be talking about that. See, that's a universal wrong. We don't have to discuss anything. What happened in Europe in the middle of the last century was wrong, but we're still listening to Nazis as if they actually have a fucking point.
know, fundamentalist Islam is wrong. But fundamentalist Judaism, we're not talking about that. Fundamentalist Christianity? Mm-mm. Nope. No way. No way, Jose. Nobody wants to discuss it, eh? Nobody wants to talk about it. But we'll talk about Caitlyn Jenner. You know, this is her personal fucking struggle. Now, politically speaking, and of course if you're gay, you already know this, but for those of you who are not gay, politically speaking, it's very goddamn important. Because, you know, that visibility helps make it a lot easier for those people who are transgender, right, to be able to get some kind of understanding from their fucking neighbors. So in that sense, it's very fucking important. But is it the number one thing we need to be discussing, her personal fucking life right now? No. Because if we're going to discuss transgender people, I want to hear talk then about Chelsea Manning. Not this. She's going to be in the news again anyway because she's being sued over that traffic accident, that fatal accident that she was involved in. So, you know, it was that part of it to sway this, you know, from her PR people? Maybe. But, you know, we're going to see her in the news regardless. Chelsea Manning isn't in the fucking news at all. So, you know, for those of you know, who might have been upset by what the fuck I just said, you know, you have to really ask yourself why you're fucking upset. You know, it is a psychological fucking fact that, you know, you have, like, for example, a white woman who was sexually assaulted by a black man will be, you know, understandably, maybe for the rest of her life, possibly when she sees other black males, it will hit a trigger. It will hit a trigger. But see, you know, as fucked up as that is, you can understand. If we talk, we can get to a solution. We can actually maybe find specific help for this person so that, you know, when they do see African males, they can relax. And maybe that's not, you know, that's not the right way to say it, but, you know, to be able to deal with it better, I should say, that would be more correct. You know, that she can find the help that she needs to be able to, you know, put this within a logical component. Not to turn off her emotions, but to be that all black men are not coming after you, that all black men are not equal. But what I'm trying to say is if we can psychologically understand that, and I've had many white women tell me, well, I can understand that. Right? But they can't understand my saying that, you know, the majority of the country is racist. I don't see the difference, Frank. Because that particular white woman, I asked her last week, you know, when was the last time you were involved in a march? Like, say, 100 million white people against police brutality and against racism in this country. And she was like, well, you know, I don't see why everybody, you know, should be held responsible. You know, everything with her is defensive. And no, we're not friends, but I have to deal with this person. And it's like, you know, she feels that white people are being blamed for everything. And that when I've asked her, do you think white people are innocent? She said yes. Yeah, when I mentioned the Klan and white patriot parties and the John Birch Society, you know, she tells me that she doesn't know anything about that. And when I asked her to do the research on it so that the next time we have a discussion about this, she can be more informed, well, I guess she's not talking to me anymore. Because, you know, I put the responsibility on her to fucking, you know, understand the fuck she's talking about. Right? You know, because she's making definite goddamn statements that, you know, the majority of the country isn't racist. So I'm like, well, prove it to me, other than pointing to Obama. Show me when racist incidents happen that, you know, there's a response. That there's an immediate, collective American response. Because I keep hearing about the American people. There is no such thing. If there was an American people, we wouldn't even be having this fucking discussion. This place isn't old enough for that yet. So let's get real about what the fuck is really going on. And get real about, you know, who we are by asking ourselves who we are and where we are standing. What sort of time and space are we in? And be able to step back from that and look at the whole and say, well, goddamn, that's how I fit into this big fucking scheme. That's the only way this shit is going to work. Because if we consider to say, well, you know what? I live around a bunch of Mexicans that shoot dope. So every goddamn Mexican in the fucking world shoots dope. See, we'll never get any goddamn.
well, this Muslim is a terrorist, so all Muslims are terrorists. See, that kind of syllogistic logic isn't logical. But if I was to say, well, hey, you know what, all white people are fucking racist because of this particular individual, well, see, now I'm wrong, we have to change the entire motherfucking, you know, argument or discussion, and it then becomes on me and how much I hate white people, when I'm asking you, well, if white people are so good, why aren't more white people doing something to stop the bad ones? Why is it here in Oregon I can see signs for the KKK? In 2015. In a fucking city. Portlandia. Confederate flags in the Pacific Northwest. Think about that. I've seen, remember when we were in Victoria, we saw Confederate flags. You know. So no. We need to really start asking questions of ourselves, of who we are and what the fuck we're about, and whether or not we actually want to fucking have all the shit that we talk about, meaning freedom, justice, and equality. Or are we really arguing that, you know, freedom, justice, and equality is only due to me and those who are just like me and fuck the rest of the world? See, we're not going to survive like that, brothers and sisters. I'm here to tell you, if you didn't know it, we're not going to make it like that. We're not going to survive like that. I don't give a fuck where you come from. Now, I'm not saying we have to get hunky-dory and just drop everything and do kumbaya, all right? And I'm gullah, so kumbaya means real shit to me. But see, we got the motherfucking Beyonce about who's getting fucked over and who's doing the fucking over. Now, who's taking advantage of this? Who are the 10%? Who are the 85%? Who are the 5%? You know what I'm saying? I mean, who are the 85%? Who are the fucking 10%? Real talk. And the 5%, hey man, they can only do, 5 can only do but so much. You dig what I'm saying? But the 85s, man, hey, turn the light bulb on. Wake the fuck up. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please, stay tuned.
Is that there are known knowns. There are things we know that we know. There are known unknowns. That is to say, there are things that we now know we don't know. But there are also unknown unknowns. There are things we do not know we don't know. And each year we discover a few more of those unknown unknowns.
This is Rad Iroh Angwa Indian. Angwa Indian Radio for the Fourth World.
Hey everybody, it's Dr. Vibe, the host and producer of the Dr. Vibe Show at thedrvibeshow.com. At our show, we do conversations and provide information for black men and those who love them. So come check us out. Also at iTunes, and also selective episodes are featured at the Good Men Project, one of the most viewed websites in the world for men. So find out about black men and those who love them at the Dr. Vibe Show.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Inform yourself about Plan B emergency contraception. Information can be the best protection, especially dealing with a sexual assault or unprotected sex. If you are 17 or older, you do not need a prescription to receive Plan B. All Indian Health Service facilities should carry Plan B, but most don't. This is a violation of your reproductive rights. Call your local Indian Health Service unit and ask for Plan B. It is our right as Native women to receive Plan B. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
तपाईलाई थाहा छ नेपालमा पहिलो पटक कहिले एचआईभी संक्रमित व्यक्ति फेला परेको थियो
थाहा छ सन् 1988 मा
यतिका वर्ष बितिसक्दा एचआईभी एड्सको क्षेत्रमा के भए सकारात्मक परिवर्तनहरू कति आए कसले के गरे
के हामीले आफ्नो जिम्मेवारी बहन गर्यौं तपाईले गर्नुभयो
जवाफ आफैसँग खोजौं जिम्मेवारी बहन गरौं
सामाजिक रूपान्तरणका लागि गगन गृहको एउटा प्रयास
I Don't Know More calls all people
to join in peaceful revolution
to honor indigenous sovereignty
and protect the land and water
for generations to come
Mexicans, South Americans, all indigenous people get inspired
take action
and become a part of the solution
It's my future
your future
our future
We are the protectors of Mother Earth
Stand up and protect it
Stand up and protect it
Stand up
and protect our earth
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
And become a part of this incredible movement.
The time has come.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Become idle no more.
African living abroad. I am. I am. African.
Me say I sound too much like African. Them say I know they do. Black urban music. So them say make it pop. Make it pop like top of the pops. Ah, but I know go back to you. Cause my tone, I don't like can be. Some other people say I know be African at all. Them say I know they beat. Cause my flow be different. So them say make I sing them so. Make I sing them just like Missy Gray. I know they bite to you.
My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable. You know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about. It should be supported. You know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
History is so compelling that there's a deadly temptation to stay in history. And I do want to get your comments about what's happening today, but just a little more in history. What really transformed you into the person who grabbed national headlines and with some of the clips that we heard that we ran at the beginning of the program? What moved you to that position?
I think we're always products of our time. And as to the coming together of certain events and ability more than anything else, I guess would contribute to any person being recognized. Down in Alabama, I became the director of the state of Alabama. At this particular time, Kwame Ture was the chairman of SNCC. And the upcoming year, when he was supposedly to be reelected, he decided that he didn't want to continue as chairman, which opened it up. And I was elected as chairman, you know, of SNCC at that particular time. This is in 67. Again, he had many different things at play. There were many different forces at play in terms of the rejection of nonviolence as a position or attitude, which was, again, being best exemplified in the northern and urban areas. In 65, you had the Watts Rebellion. In New York in 64, there was a rebellion. So that whole attitude of, you know, defending oneself was prevalent in the movement at that time. So again, it's contributed toward my understanding and development as much as anything else.
You never espoused violence per se, but only as a tactic toward self-defense.
It is a tactic. It is a tactic. But see, violence is that's the American way of life. This is what we learned before anything else, that it's the American way of life. Much like if there's a prologue that comes on before Superman, in which it says, you know, Superman, he fights for truth, justice, and the American way. Not truth, justice, in the American way, or truth, justice, the inference being the American way. The American way is something totally different from that. So again, the American way has always been violent. It has always, you know, been predicated upon being violent. So it was a part of that which we understood and we knew.
Was all of that struggle, all of that pain that you went through, when you look at today, was it worth it?
Well, I think our analysis of struggle has to be as such that it's an ongoing process. See, if our analysis of struggle is that it began in the 50s, we could reason that it ended in the 60s, which is not the case. When the first African rebelled against being enslaved He gave an alternative to slavery that has been built upon even until now. What we saw in the 50s and the 60s was movement. And there had been many movements before. There had been the abolitionist movement, the anti-slavery movement, the Niagara movement, the civil rights movement, the free speech movement. You know, there have been movements. Movements that visit struggle. But struggle is an ongoing process. So even today, we are in the midst of struggle. Again, struggle is at a different level than it was at that particular time. What do you see today? Again, there are more components, you know, who are aligned to participate in struggle today than there were in the 60s.
You see anything analogous to the Panther Party or SNCC today?
Well, those organizations serve their purpose, but there are organizations that will come into being who will be activists, and who will be, the activism will be similar and more intense in many instances, because we have to understand that SNCC evolved into a point and then the Panthers became a reality. But the Panthers were not the final organization. After the Panthers, there was the BLA. So again, you know, that whole sense of involvement and what happened in terms of the BLA is that the population, the base, there was no real base to sustain military action. But what do we see happening today? You see, in terms of, there is a kind of attitude amongst the young people today that is militaristic. You have people, and although the energy is misdirected and many people may put it down in terms of the fratricide that's going on, how else do you train an army in this country?
So you view what you see happening in the urban centers as constructive and positive?
It's not constructive or positive, but again, it is something that always is the prelude to armed struggle in any country. That has always been the case.
One more break.
What has happened to H. Rapp Brown since? Has he changed? What is he doing now? We'll find out in just a moment.
Welcome to Like It Is. It's been a long time, 25 years at least. How did you come to get the name that you now are known by, Jamil Alameen?
I seek refuge in Allah from misleading and from being misled, from betraying and being betrayed into ignorance by others. I ask Allah to guide my heart and to guide my tongue. And I begin in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Jamil Abdullah Alameen means beautiful servant of Allah, the trustworthy. Again, the naming is very significant. Naming in any society is significant because it gives one something that he aspires to. It gives a description as to what a person is. My name was given to me when I was incarcerated, when I was in prison, after becoming Muslim. And again, the name Jamil, which the Arabic translation is beautiful, Abdullah means servant of Allah, and the Alameen is the trustworthy, which was one of the titles that the Prophet was known by, you know, trustworthy of.
Was it in prison that you embraced Islam?
I became Muslim. I took a Shahada, what's called the Declaration of Faith, when I was incarcerated, when I was in prison, when I was on Rikers Island.
And who bestowed that name on you?
There was a strong Islamic movement known as the Darul Islam movement, which was headquartered or centered in at the Yassin Mosque out in Brooklyn. And they used to come inside the prisons to conduct the Juma, the Friday services. So it was these brothers who came in, you know, and one of the brothers who invited me to come to Juma. And I went several times before becoming Muslim, but after becoming Muslim, one of the brothers gave me the name.
Let's go back a bit. Where were you raised, born and raised?
Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
What kind of young man were you?
Well,
let's say as a student, what kind of personality were you? Were you athletic? Were you quiet, shy, outspoken? What kind of young man were you?
I guess, you know, some of all of those things. I played ball.
Basketball?
Basketball, football, and track.
Mm-hmm.
Was brought up in the church. You know, we were brought up in the church.
What church?
It was the Baptist church. My mother's church, my father's church for a while. And
really, your father was a pastor?
No, not a pastor.
He's just a church. Okay.
He attended the church.
Mm-hmm.
But the activism became through my brother Ed, who he's an older brother,
my older brother. And he became involved in the movement when he set in at the Greyhound bus station and was expelled from Southern University.
Where was this? What town?
This is in Baton Rouge.
Uh-huh.
You know, this was during the sit-in demonstrations. We had been active earlier just in the community during voter registration with the YMCA. But as the political activism, you know, as that I was involved in later, had its bearing upon what Ed had done. I was still in high school. Ed was expelled from Southern University and later got a scholarship to Howard. But as a result of that, you know, I was propelled into a kind of activism dealing with the students at Southern University.
Well, it's not as simple as all that. Your education, you didn't learn much about our history in school.
Oh, no. I think that the only African-American personality that may have occurred in the books that we used, it was either George Washington Carver or Booker T. Washington.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was a total absence of any kind of African-American or black positive image, you know, for us when we were coming up as to the history.
So then, when did the political education begin, which precedes, I would think, political activism?
Well, it was clear in terms of the kind of apartheid that was being practiced in the South and throughout America at that particular time. It was clear that there was an injustice that was being done.
We're talking about the 50s now.
The 50s and into the 60s. You
okay.
know. So again, it was a spawning ground for activism because people were keenly aware of the difference between, you know, the European community and the African American community. I lived in Baton Rouge where you have Southern University and you have LSU. And I lived about a mile from LSU. So we would, you know, visit the campus that LSU had, and there was no comparison between what LSU had and what Southern University was. And Southern University was one of the better, you know, physical plants that African Americans had for a school at that particular time, but it was no comparison in terms of LSU. And just the things that was instilled in us as youngsters growing up in the South as a means of trying to survive, what your mother always tries to instill in you to make you do things so as not to antagonize, to make yourself a target in a situation where, you know, African-American males were being killed. So these are the things that were prominent in the environment, but at the same time, as Allah says in the Quran, he says, fight tyranny and oppression, because tyranny and oppression is worse than slaughter.
But what I want to know is where it came from. I mean, if you were well, well reared to be, you know, seen and not heard, respectful and all of that, where did this spine come from? And what was the reaction on the part of your parents when they saw your shoulders beginning to square and your spine beginning to straighten?
Again, the Creator has placed within every person a kind of understanding of what is natural. He says, men are created with the inclination to do what's natural. It's not natural for people to be enslaved. But again, even in the environment that tries to make this acceptable to you, you still have some resistance to it. And so this coupled with the fact that the movement was gaining momentum, the movement was gaining momentum in the 50s and the 60s. And so through media, you know, we saw images of people who were resisting. And within ourselves, we understood that there was a natural thing that you had to stand up at some time and say that, you know, we can't go any further with this.
All right, let's take a break and we'll continue in a moment. Stay with us.
This is Radio Intelligente Rindigena.
I've got a Colt 45 in here with me. I'll scare off intruders in my fatigues, black jackets, and army boots. My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way. I don't care. always talking to me. I don't see things their way. Yeah, I'm on the right side. I'm on the right side. The only side.